absolutely learn a lot from the financial market. And if the first thing I could do is get people up off this train, people coming actually learning content and learning about where markets are headed, not being a passenger, but being in the driver's seat.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors, find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategy. I'm Tarun Shum, and in this episode of Property Investory, we continue the conversation with CEO of Oasis Properties, Gavin McPherson. With over 40 properties in his portfolio, he'll share with us about the people who have inspired him in his property investing journey, and most importantly, the strategy he uses. As McPherson shares, he believes his property investing method of accumulating wealth was quite easy to apply.
I've actually gone a full circle to some degree and made people and start to believe now that once you have as many properties as you do, it starts to become a little bit punitive. Collecting properties, and if anyone who read my book has got the story out of it, collecting properties is not the mission. It's about collecting money. Now, let's forget the moral argument of collecting money, whether that's right or wrong. Let's just say we are collecting money. So property is just a vehicle. So my point is, I suppose at the start, I thought property was an easier way to get there. And I still believe that. So nothing's changed in that. And what I mean by that is, to give you a contrarian point of view, I suppose right now, if I sat right now with everything I'm investing in, I can tell you with absolute confidence that I do not believe that property is the best thing that will perform the best thing in my portfolio in 2017. However, the difference with that is with property is that I can take $100,000 and I can borrow $900,000, which makes $1 million. And if the market goes up by 10%, I've actually got 100% return on investment. Obviously, forgetting my friction cost. Let's understand the friction cost in there as well, but just understand the notion. Let's execute that to another investment. And if I could be so bold, I'm a bigger, some people would know I'm a big commodities investor right now. I've got something close to a couple of $1 million in a uranium mine. That sounds bizarre, and some people, and I'm not encouraging people at all to get themselves into uranium. However, I believe over the next 12 months, that will be a much better investment. Now, my point is, however, every single dollar of that uranium investment, every single one, is cold hard cash. Okay, $2 million property, I might only have $400,000 or $500,000 up for grabs. So to go back to that actual first point is that property has leverage going for it. Do not pretend. I think people are kidding themselves if they think that property is the best performing vehicle out there, because it unequivocally is not. And I'd say almost in no uncertain terms, since 1901, property has outstripped inflation by between 1% and 2%. That's good. That's great. But it's excellent with leverage. So all we actually should be talking about here is leverage. Now, look, I'm not sure whether that answers the question or not, but with regards to where I see property, I probably now, I don't have disdain for it, please. Property has been very, very, very good to me. But I'm probably more inclined now to be a divestor of property rather than an investor of property. And I don't mean to say I'm going to sell on my investments. That's not what I'm saying. But when you get to a certain level, it doesn't make sense to necessarily carry, 40, 50 properties under your arm, pay all your holding taxes.
Although having a mentor has not worked for him personally, there are multiple people who have inspired him. In addition to certain resources which he has used to educate himself on the industry, he says diversifying your resources is paramount.
Okay, I always encourage people, they must read the book, The Trick to Money is Having Some, by a gentleman called Stuart Wilde. That's the first thing. And I will never say mentor. And let me say something very, very contrarian, because I know this goes against the grain for a lot of people, okay? And let me give you an example as well, because I don't think I think for some people a mentor can be very, very helpful. However, people have to be very careful to understand that I see mentors as a bit of a danger, because and the reason I say that is because I believe you need to look within for your own mentor. You need to be that person that changes yourself and eventually get to a certain level you realize the humanity of the mentor. They have their own quirks and they have their own problems. They have their own issues, and sometimes it breaks down what we think about them. The point I'm trying to make is I take tips from people that I can absolutely disagree with on 99 things, but I think they have one great pearl of wisdom, and I take that pearl of wisdom. The perfect individual doesn't exist, and the perfect investment doesn't exist. To give you an example, everyone would know who's read my book, I Love Warren Buffett, to the extent that he's, you know, he only really applies five or 10 rules to his whole life and makes him, you know, the second, third most richest person on earth and certainly the most richest investor on earth. Having said that, I actually despise a lot of his political leanings and political, not even leanings, but political understanding. I think he's actually almost primary school age in the way that he understands the world. And that sounds like a remarkable statement, but that's my opinion. So I suppose I try and suggest to them that these people are the ones that are creating their own future. And if they can get a good tip off Susie, that's great. But to consider, you know, Susie, for instance, a mentor and everything, it just hasn't worked for me. Having said that, I know you're looking for some cues. I go to, there's a gentleman called Frank Giusta. Now, Frank Giusta, I'd say almost no one knows anything about in this country, but he's a billionaire out of Canada. He owns a company called also Lionsgate. My point being, Frank, he's an incredible guy. He's an economist as well. So it certainly shows, you know, the amount of deliberation, and has got some amazing lessons. And it's taught me certainly now to start to look at what makes the world tick. Our three biggest leading indicators of our economy are China, USA, and Europe. You could absolutely learn a lot from the financial market. And if the first thing I could do is get people off this train, actually learning content and learning about where markets are headed, not being a passenger, but being in the driver's seat, I want these people to pick up The Australian every weekend. I want them to pick up The Financial Review every day. I want them to read Late Line every night, to listen to Late Line on Channel 2 every night. I want them to invest themselves into actual financial markets, not just locally but globally, and understand that we're followers here, we're not leaders. So I'm expecting these people, you know, some of these investors and hopefully some of your listeners start to listen to this and sort of, you know, man up to the occasion, because this is pretty tough times ahead, and if people can, and when I say tough times, anytime there's tough times for some people, there's opportunity for others. So let's turn your listeners into those that are opportunists.
McPherson found property investment inspiration from a range of sources, including his surrounding family and even the most powerful man in America.
You're probably not going to believe this, because it's just absolute coincidence. Donald Trump's book didn't hurt the situation. Put it that way. Donald Trump had a book out a long time ago. So it was, and I should also mention, I have family who are property developers. So it certainly wasn't foreign to me. I knew that was the ability to make a lot of money doing it. And as much as obviously I mentioned my parents and their interests, we were certainly always circling around property. Let me say tradesmen and builders, etc. So I knew by virtue, and actually, if I can give myself another compliment, if I'm allowed, sure, I'm very good with my hands. I'm very good with my hands. I think I really enjoy actually building myself. So I know most trades, and when I say I can do most trades, I mean I prefer not to, of course, but it helps to have across the board. I could, you know, you could pretty much sit there and not be fleeced by a builder preparing a contract for you and go on site every day. And that's a real powerful tool, to go on site every day and know actually what the order of business and things should be going. And that's something that I learned pretty much even before 20. And to have that skill set behind you and know the effort, A, it probably taught me enough to know that the job wasn't for me, but B, it taught me to know at least that is a vehicle through which you had to bear the cost of, or either the effort of, which is dealing with builders, to get through. To dovetail that into the conversation about what made me want to develop, I do remember, you know, I think it was probably more a influence of my uncle. As I mentioned, I do remember, and I remember even where I read the book, which is in Sydney Library, Donald Trump's book, which is, and I can't remember, because he wrote a few, but one of them might have been The Art of the Deal. It was a book he wrote in the mid-90s. Mm. And that certainly resonated with me, at least from, I found from point of negotiation, which I think suited my my demeanor or my my skill set, maybe perhaps, my communication skills. And I thought that's something I could deliver. And so what I did effectively to explain, I went to Gladstone on the back of basically putting all my investments that I'd made prior, just good investments, solid investments in Sydney, mind you, when I was young. So since I pretty much could afford a mortgage, I got a mortgage. And I parlayed those profits or that equity into three sites in Gladstone. One of those was a block of units. One of those was called as almost a boarding house, I suppose you would say, only on one title, but getting me significant rent. And one of those was a house. And to cut a long story short, and maybe to give some advice, and this is where I want to remind myself now to finish up the conversation with you about cash flow. I thought I could develop and just be a developer from day dot. And what I realized is, and the biggest mistake I made, is that I thought I was going to demolish this house, which I did, and I thought I was going to get a DA within 6 to 8 weeks. I don't know why I thought that. I thought perhaps because I did make a few trips to council. I met the mayor because I explained the investments that myself and my family were making in the town at that time. And for some reason, I thought this might have been the 1970s, and maybe he was, I don't know, maybe his hands were under the table looking for a brown paper bag that weren't there. It wasn't there. And in any event, I was left without a DA for, call it, 8-10 months. But me being the fool I was, I knocked down two of those places pretty much immediately. No cash flow.
McPherson shares a very important lesson. And looking back in hindsight, he wants us to not make the same mistake.
The cash flow that was necessary to keep that going was my biggest downfall, and why I didn't stay as a developer with $30,000 coming out of my month, out of my pocket every month. I at least needed an income of $50,000 to $100,000 at least to see this thing through, which I didn't have at the time because I said I'm just going to be a developer. So my point is if people don't like their job, before they make that excursion and decide to quit their job and go and buy 64 properties in the bush, right? I really think they'd owe it to themselves and maybe take a holiday first, right, and spend the most money on themselves, and maybe just even consider either finding some other changes in the organization or some changes to an industry that they actually did enjoy. Because it's one thing, even as wealthy as I'm now, it's one of those things I don't expect to go from where I want to be in 3 years' time. If I tried to do that tomorrow, I would go broke. And that's almost anyone who's ambitious and trying to get to the next stage, you know, in their life. So cash flow is very important. And I would, you know, I'd be the last person to suggest your clients or your listeners went out and quit their jobs tomorrow to become investors, because you need cash flow. And so finding that cash flow vehicle is really important. And like I said at the start of this interview, I make my money from investing. And so someone might say to me, well, why don't you just give up your job? In fact, I had the question yesterday. Why don't you just give up the job and be a professional investor? And the bottom line is, as good an investor as I am, I know that 3 years out of 10, it's still going to be bad times and I have to suffer through those and I need income. And the other thing I learned is when you are a business person and or an investor, or you could almost call them the same because an investor is still a business person, you make terrible, terrible decisions when you do not have money coming in your bank account. And those decisions do not make for wise for future profit growth.
Coming up after the break, we'll delve into McPherson's strategy.
I look for things that smell. Because in short, I'm looking for great assets when there's no buyers.
How it's important to always have a backup strategy.
The cure for high prices is high prices.
And that's next. I'm Tyrone Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. How would you like to start a part-time business from home and make you at least $27,000 in the next 12 months while spending less than 7 hours a week on it? When you register for this 90-minute online business workshop at propertyinvestory.com/SPI, it's hosted by one of our past guests on the show, Jenny Brown from the Spending Planners Institute. She'll show you a proven way to get out of the rat race for good and meet all your financial needs and dreams. Best of all, the training is free. Claim your seat by the 30th of September before registration closes at propertyinvestory.com/SPI. And now back to our show. Having grown his portfolio to over 40 properties, McPherson has formulated a clear strategy for investing in property. He also acknowledges that sometimes the hardest thing to do as an investor is nothing at all.
I buy low every single time, every single time. And when I say that, I don't just mean a property in today, which I believe is an overpriced market in Sydney and Melbourne, for instance, at $1 million and pick it up for 900, because I believe even 900 is too expensive in, say, a year and a half, 2 years' time. What I'm saying is I look for things that are in the toilet, whole industries, property, uranium, right, iron ore, banking, don't care where. I look for things that smell. Because in short, I'm looking for great assets when there's no buyers. That's that simple. So that's the first story. To take that to another level, if the market in, you know, across an industry, uranium, it might be 500% down. In property, it might be 10, 15% down. When it's in that environment already, then I go around and I make sure I shave another 10% off that already, which I call my margin of safety. So irrespective of whether I hold that property as a core asset, meaning forever, or I trade it, either way, I'm covered. Now, what happens is it's a coincidence, but it's a beautiful coincidence that when you're buying things at the bottom of the market, you'll find that their yields are particularly high. Let's say $185,000 for, or even something in Sydney. I'll go back to 2012, two bedroom, one bath, one car in Coogee, 565. I think everyone would acknowledge around about the eastern seaboard that Coogee Beach, two bedroom, one bath, one car, 565 is a great property, and $650 per week return. Okay, now. Obviously, as we all know, 4 years later, call it end of 2016, now where we are 2017, that property is worth $900,000. Mm. However, that yield has now gone down to 580. Now, I'm not crying in my Wheaties over that because I paid 565. Yep. Okay, because obviously as markets go up and more property gets supplied and investors put stock onto the market, the tenants to occupy, rents go down. But either way, I think the analogy is also the example is really clear. Purchase 565, now worth 900, only renting for 580, but pick it up at 650 rent. That's all I do. It's a really simple formula. And right now, with few exceptions, I don't buy in Sydney or Melbourne. So it's one of those, that's the lesson I think we had in the last podcast, which is sometimes one of the hardest things to do as an investor is nothing.
In a situation where you have purchased a property in a declining market and is not improving, McPherson shares with us his tactics, including the importance of having a backup plan.
This for me is that moment, if anyone's ever driven a manual car and it just clicks. Okay, I want everyone to listen. This is so important, Tyrone. Let me say this. The cure for high prices is high prices. And the cure for low prices is low prices. Now, that might mean nothing to people or everything to people, but let me play this out, okay? So let's just go with that. I pick it up at 185, and what you're effectively saying is, so what I'm trying to say is, let's go with Gold Coast 2007 and 8, okay? Prices were too high. People were beating prices out. Now, that creates an environment where everyone's putting new stock on the market because everyone's encouraged to do so, correct?
Correct.
Okay? We had an oversupply. However, that oversupply, after creating that situation where it had oversupply and prices dropped to such an amount that people were not incentivized to build any new property for another 9 years. Okay? Now, that creates an environment where eventually, right, the prices get down so low, right, that no more stock has been built. Okay? Mm-hmm. And that can happen anywhere. I could apply this to muffins. Okay? Eventually, if you take sugar and I should know the ingredients, but I don't. Egg and water and flour, I'm imagining, to put into a muffin. Yeah. And they all cost you $1.35, and the market only pays you a dollar. What that means is people who do that for a living will not make muffins anymore.
Yeah.
And the ones that are currently doing it, that have muffin projects on the go, they will go bust. And over a very short period of time, eventually, that will mean no muffins get created for an extended period of time. Now, muffins being a really poor example, but let's pretend it's property. If I'm wrong, and prices don't go up in Gold Coast, okay, what that means is there's no incentive to put extra product in the market. So eventually, those properties that people are holding, especially with interstate migration to Gold Coast that there is, okay, all it just means is you're going to be holding a property for $365 and your rent's going to go from $400 to $450 to $500 to $550 to $600. So how's that a bad thing?
So basically you've got a backup strategy behind it if something goes
exactly.
wrong with the purchase.
Having said that, I was very disingenuous in saying that. Let me explain, because markets don't function that way. Because when returns get to about a 4.5-5% yield, the market recognizes that and closes the gap, just like they're doing right now.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
You get a property, you buy it for $365, you're getting $350, $365 a week rent for it. Eventually, the market wakes up because they're getting a 2% return in Sydney, and they go, oh, I'll go Gold Coast. And eventually, so take it, put it another way. Let's got a $1 million block of land. We've got a $1 million block of land, and forget the friction cost for a moment. Let's just wrap that up in the land of $1 million. Let's put a $500,000 house on top equals 1.5. So let me ask you, Tyrone, if the market came up and only paid you 1.3 for it, what would you do as a developer?
Probably.
You would go bust?
Yep, I'd go bust.
And you wouldn't do it in the future if you were a developer on the sidelines thinking about it. Eventually, that happens for so long, people come on your door and go, well, what if I give you 1.6 for it? In short, what you have to remember is when you're getting a high yield, there's not enough property. And I know it might not sound like it, but I know I'm answering your question there. Insofar as what if the price doesn't go up, that's really easy. That just means with the people that are still moving in the, because I'm taking the underlying principle, of course, that I go into areas where I know migration is going to be in the right direction. We're talking areas where we know which have a highly predisposed to upward growth. So as long as we take that premise, we know that in the future, without enough dwellings, rents are going up.
Exercising is a big part of McPherson's life and contributes to his state of mind, which in turn aids him in his success.
I mean, I used to exercise 1,000 k's a week on the bike, 130, 140 k's running, probably not that much swimming, but I was a good swimmer anyway, maybe 15, 20 or so. I know 20 is a bit too much actually in my old days. So I do a lot of exercise. So every morning I'm on my stand-up paddleboard. Every single morning without fail, I then swim straight after it, and I may run. That might sound like a lot to a lot of people, but that's kind of just my morning. Like, I get that over and done with by 6:30. And then once that's done, I usually, because the gym's across the road from where I work, I go to the gym twice a day. Really, that is just for me a place of mind. When I feel healthy and I feel strong, I take that into my working life, and I embrace that now. And I'll be honest with you, this is probably the downside of that. I do suffer from depression, and that's probably a personal thing I don't always enjoy telling people, but I've come past a full circle, and I just know now when I don't inject those things in my life, that just amplifies any depression I would ever have a chance of getting. So exercise is a must for me.
If you enjoyed this episode and would like to reach out and connect with McPherson, here's how you can do that.
I get probably about 2-3 emails a week where people would just email at info@oasisproperty.com.au and they would just thank me for the lessons they might have learned from my book. And to a man, almost every single one of those people, at least when they're local, I try and make an effort to catch up with them. Almost every single one of those persons cannot afford our fees. So it's certainly, I never fish for business. They're certainly welcome to ring our hotline, 870-02-8705-3252. That's our Sydney number, but it will get through to our other offices as well. And the one thing, and I think, you know what? I think at this stage in business, I'm actually happy to ask for people's business in this sense, because what I mean by that is we have four prongs to our business. We have a mortgage broking arm, we have a property management arm, we have a legal division, and we also do buyer's agency. But to start up and use our buyer's agency is a $9,680 service, just to start. However, for people that do use that service, that's a client for life, so you're always welcome to come. If they want to contact us through those numbers or email, or just our website, www.oasisproperty.com.au.
Thank you to Gavin McPherson, our guest on this episode of Property Investory. If you want to hear more about his journey, then visit our website at propertyinvestory.com. Simply type in the search bar, Gavin McPherson, and select that episode to learn more about his story. Also, I would love to hear from you. If you own property and want to share your story, send me an email to hello@propertyinvestory.com. To spell property investory, simply type the words property investor with the letter Y. Alternatively, if you open the description of this episode, you'll see a link to click on to reach out to me. Thanks for listening.